Okay, this is day four, I believe, of our processing training. And today we are going to just continue to go over some documents that you're going to be seeing borrower send you. And then we're also going to go over how to submit a title request and how to submit an insurance request to those third parties on a transaction so you can help the borrower get their deal going. So just to kind of start off, Dana, were you able to get into the Google Drive?
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to do that right now because I'm
No.
driving.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought that was who said that. My apologies.
I beg your
Okay.
pardon.
Yeah, all right. Well, for everyone that's in, I did upload a couple other things, and you're just going to go to the same spot we went last time. You're just going to click on the Google Apps and go to the Drive section. All right, pulling up. Why don't we real quick just go down to, I uploaded a lot of forms, but I just want to go into Andrew George's file. Everyone can go into there real quick. And just see if there's anything here I didn't go over yesterday in terms of documents. I mean, entity documents are so important. One thing about Andrew George's file is this was a large blanket loan we were working on with Lima One, and he was required to set up a new entity. It had to be a Delaware formed entity. So you can see in his, I had so many documents on his file. You can see I have so many folders in here because if I didn't organize things, there's no way I would find anything on this deal. So I just want to give you guys some tips on how, you see me organizing things. You can see, obviously, title again. I put all title in the folder. All docs the title company sends me, I always just put them in there. Taxes, those are his tax returns. He had to submit tax returns. You can see I broke up the entities, by new entity and old entity. Again, just saving myself time. I could have labeled them like entity docs one or entity docs two, but I had to know what documents were for the new entity that was being formed because people throughout the transaction would email me. Like, there were so many lawyers involved in the transaction and the title company and the lender and be like, oh, I need the entity docs for the new entity, but they wouldn't put the name of the new entity in the email. So that's actually how I was keeping track of what's the new entity and what's the old entity, and that's why I labeled them both like that. Again, anything too that, on a file, anything on the file that is just something that you need to know and is going to save you time, go right into that contact info, click on that little crown thing. Not sure if that's what it is, but that's what it looks like. It looks like a pencil to me. Go in there and just start making notes under where we keep, you'll see we keep track of the lenders, when we were quoted, the date, and then we start adding stuff in there like who placed the file, what's the fee, who's the lender, who's getting paid, the company name, who makes up the company. I'm working on a couple large blanket loans right now, and maybe one to two of the units aren't rented out, and I've even put that in there. I mean, I could pull up the rent roll every single time, but that, again, you have to save your time every time you are processing a loan file. So just put that in there. Okay, so rent verification. We're starting to do a good amount of business with Lima One, so everyone's going to have to know how they like this done. It's not too complicated, but if you want to click on it, you can. They actually, if their units are rented, they want proof that the rent is being deposited into. They want them to be deposited into company bank accounts. They don't really like to see rent being deposited into a personal bank account. I think sometimes that does happen, but most people that have like a large portfolio of rental properties are distributing rent into that company bank account. That's usually how people do it. So what they actually have you do, and it's on our document list, which is very specific. There's a lot of document lists we have that I've wrote out things to even make it more specific because, when the lender's asking for it, they just ask for the rent verification, but they don't always tell you what do I need to provide for that. So they will accept bank statements. And you can go into the September and August files if you want. But they'll accept bank statements where that rent is being deposited, but then the borrower has to circle the rent. And next to that circle, they also have to put the address of the property that rent payment is for. They'll accept that, or they'll accept copies of the cash checks that, you know, they're getting for rent from the tenants. So, okay, on Andrew, he sent me, because he had a property manager, you can even look at some of these. His property manager actually was the one collecting the rent, and they actually send him a statement every single month for every unit when they collect the rent. So this was a lot of fun, me going through and labeling all of this. But I just would, you know, label by the month and then the property address. And then I had to go back to the data tape, the big rent roll we have, and I had to go through and make sure that he sent me a rent verification for these 2 months and every single property address was accounted for. And what I do is when, you know, our blanket loan application, when that's obviously how we keep track of all the properties on a blanket loan, that's how all lenders have a very, very similar form. And that form is actually Lima One's form. We just edited a little bit. But what I do is when I have a blanket loan and I have to get something on every single property, what I do sometimes is I'll color code the property addresses on the blanket form. You know, just if I'm going through the rent verification for September, what I did was I went through everything that he sent me, you know, the property manager sent me for the rent verification for that month, and then I would just highlight in red what address I had for the rent verification. And then as long as all of them were highlighted red from all the forms I went through, I knew I had all of them, if that makes any sense to anybody. If it doesn't, let me know. I'll try to explain it better. But that's what you have to do sometimes to make sure, like, you really have everything. Going back to Andrew George's main file, I mean, you know, quotes, I do this with all of our lenders. If they give us quotes throughout the deal, we had so many different quotes on Andrew's file. You can see in there because it was like a credit thing at first, and we had to get authorization because his credit score was like 1 point under where they usually live or lend, something really, really small. And then the appraisals came back, but then he ended up taking three properties out of the blanket transaction, so we just kept going back and forth on these quotes. So what I usually do with all these quotes is I actually just label them. You'll see some of them have the dates on them. Really, all of them should have the dates on them, but Lima One actually has the date on all of their quotes as well. So I can actually go through them and figure out how did the process of all this change with the quotes. But to be more organized, really, I should have labeled all of them. Sometimes I'll pull little tricks, like if I have multiple documents of something, like say someone sends me the purchase and sales agreement like three different times because, I don't know, sometimes people just decide to send you stuff, the same thing, three different times, or maybe somehow it had slight adjustments with buyer's, you know, initials, seller's initials. When I have, sometimes I don't always delete. A lot of times I don't delete stuff that people send me that I don't even need. Sometimes I'll make like an extra or don't need folder or something like that. I call it something like that. And I'll just still file that stuff in there just in case someone, I end up needing something and someone says, well, I sent that to you. You know, then you're like, well, I deleted it because I didn't think I'd need it. But, you know, now you needed it. But sometimes if I have multiple documents of one thing, like say the purchase and sales agreement, and I need to know which one's the most current, I'll actually label it, you know, purchase and sales, you know, PSA is usually how I abbreviate, but I'll put like a little asterisk in front so I know when I go into the purchase and sales agreement folder. I know he sent me a copy of this like five different times, and I have all five of them in there, but this one that I believe is the most current that has all the signatures on it is actually the one. So just another trick. I always make a folder too, like when you're dealing with, you guys can see there's so many documents on this loan. When obviously there was a million leases on this folder, they all had, you know, I put them all in a folder for leases. They're all in there. I also make a folder called Need to Send. And, you know, lenders don't like when you just piecemeal them stuff, you know, one or two things at a time. Like, especially on a file like this, where so many documents were needed from forming a new entity to this property management agreement, which became a huge thing. to the edits that the lawyer, Lima One's lawyer, was making for Andrew George on the property management agreement and on his new operating agreement and all their stuff. You know, it was just so much needed. When Andrew was, and I was dealing with all of his party, his property manager, his lawyer, he had a lawyer. But when people, all of these different parties would send me stuff, because I was kind of like the central hub, just all of you, here's your list, send it to me, and then I'll distribute it to whoever needs it. I would download it. I would put it into the need to send folder. I would label it all properly. One thing you always have to do is, one thing I have not mentioned is you have to label things properly that make sense. And you have to separate documents for lenders. It's a very big broker thing to just send a ton of stuff to a lender all together and not separated. But I'm telling you, if you keep doing that to their processors, their processors are already going to make mistakes, even if you do separate this stuff properly and make it very clear that this is this month's bank statement for this count and this month, you're going to make it 10 times harder on them, and they're going to want to work with you more if you can just be more organized and separate these things. But all things should be separated. But anyways, if I get some stuff, like say someone only sends me like two things, I waited on a file like this till I had a good chunk of stuff, maybe like 7 documents they needed or something before I would actually send it in. But you have to keep track of what have you sent in to the lender and what have you not. And that's how I do it on all of our files. On all of our files, I always have a need to send folder. And if I haven't sent, you know, stuff in because I'm waiting to get a couple more things to send all in, I put it in there because I'll never remember all the files on my desktop, what did I actually send in, what I didn't. When obviously I send it into lender, I take it out of the need to send and I put it in the folder or wherever else it's going to go. But that's how I keep track of it. It's helped me so much, or I wouldn't be able to keep track of all this. If you guys want to click on bank statements, I just wanted to show you a good way to organize bank statements, because you're going to deal with lenders that are crazy about these bank statements. And I had so many bank accounts on Andrew, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He sent me 7 different accounts. So I always label them by just the last 4 digits of the account. That's how all the lenders really track them. One time he just sent me a bunch of random bank statements. They were like all kinds of bank statements that didn't even match up to the accounts I had. So I just made a folder for more bank statements. Then he had a bank statement from Ibera Bank, if I'm saying that right. I just labeled them the bank name because for some reason I was having a hard time finding the – oh, okay, I did label it by the account number. Okay. But anyways, on the bank statements, if you want to click on any of these folders, you should always label it the bank statement either – you know, if it's a personal bank statement, I would have done George and then the month, bank statement, account, last 4 digits. If it's an entity name, I always put the entity name, dash the month, bank statement, account, last 4 digits. You should have them all the same, and again, they should all be separated. Let me just see if there's anything else we can go through here that makes sense. And if not, we can just kind of move on to the title and insurance request.
Hey, Megan.
Yeah.
When you talk about being able to separate, I think what I have happen, sometimes people send me docs, and maybe this is what you're referring to. Sometimes they'll send it like a bunch of different types of docs, but it's all under just one PDF.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean, like
That's
being able to separate
about.
Those?
Yeah.
But I don't know that everybody has the technical ability to do that. I, for one, I don't know if that requires some sort of like paid version of Adobe PDF creator. Like I don't. Like any sort of free Adobe software, I don't think allows you to do that. At least I can't do it. So I don't know that everybody
has the ability. No, the ones don't allow you to do it. You have to have a paid version of Adobe, too. Like it's Adobe Acrobat Pro. I have a copy of it because I paid a monthly fee for the Adobe CC, so I have like all the programs.
Ryan, we'll figure out.
I found that Cute PDF Filler Pro is pretty inexpensive. And it allows me to separate those huge PDFs.
Yeah, we don't need to get bogged down in this particular topic right at the moment, but I just want to point out that not everybody may have the ability to do that.
Yeah, no, I hear where you're coming from, and we'll figure it out just so you know. I have a Mac, and I think everyone else on the phone has a PC.
Mm-hmm.
But just so everyone knows, the way I separate these big PDFs, and I learned this from Chris like years ago, I just honestly, I pull up the big PDF and I go to print preview, and that's how I separate them. I just, if that makes sense. So you have a big PDF of like 30 documents and say page one is the EIN document. I just go to print preview and then you can select the pages sometimes, you know, like one to one or say the next page.
Yeah.
I
don't have that ability because I remember you telling me that in the past and I tried that and for me it doesn't work. So I don't, again,
same,
I don't know if there's
same here.
Some sort of a paid version or if it's a Macintosh thing or I don't know what, but.
I don't know. Cause
I think it's a Macintosh thing. Windows tends to not be so nice.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't let me save as when I do that.
So
it
when
like
you go to print preview and like say mm-hmm. you want to do a print preview of just pages like 2 to 5 because maybe that's a copy of a lease for one tenant.
Right. Yep.
It won't let you just bring it up as a print preview and then you can save it to your desktop as however you want to label it.
No, that's what I just did here and it doesn't let me do it.
It doesn't allow you to change the printer.
Okay, just try printing. Just tell it to print and choose the pages, and then I think you'll have save as PDF because I can do that on Windows. That's standard.
Yeah, that does work.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I did. I've got page 2 open, save as PDF, but I still can't. It still saves the whole file for me. Like it shows.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I can. Hold on.
We'll figure that out, guys.
Yeah.
There's got to be something we can do, though, because that's what I do. But if we have to get you a paid version of Adobe, it's not a big deal. I'm sure it's not that expensive. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking out of turn. Maybe it is really expensive, but we'll figure it out. But that's how I do it on my computer. I use Print Preview to separate everything. One thing, I know we already talked about separating stuff, but leases are a big thing that people usually send me, like, all together. If they have 20 leases, they'll typically, and I get it, like as the borrower, you're not there to, I totally understand, you know, you're not there to like perfect your loan package. That's not your job, especially if you have a broker representing you that's supposed to be helping you. But if you want to go into Andrew George's file and just click on leases, I always label the leases by the tenant's name if they're obviously residential tenants. Sometimes on big commercial properties or mixed-use properties, you're also going to have tenants that are businesses that are in the bottom, so you want to label it by the business's name. I always just put the business name, lease, or maybe even just start off lease first and then the business name, lease, and then the person's personal name. But I just always, you know, label them so everyone can see what they are. I always make sure, usually on the first page, it states if the lease is, what's the start and end date of the lease. I know it's painful. It was really painful for Andrew George's file to go through all these leases, but I went through all of them. I made sure they were all current. I made sure they were all fully signed at the bottom. I made sure I had every single page of the lease. Couple of them were expired when I went through them, and you can see that. And I actually separated from the huge packet he sent me, and I labeled them expired. So I knew which ones were expired when I went into this folder, and I knew which ones weren't, you know. And I emailed him letting him know I would need updated ones. And so much went on with this file. I don't know if I ever got updated ones, but Lima One closed the loan. So, but, yeah, you always want to make sure if they are already expired that maybe they have some type of month-to-month agreement. Sometimes the lease will say on there, after this one-year lease, the deal is month-to-month, you know. So it's a big thing with lenders. I run into that a lot during underwriting. And going into a deal, I always ask the lender, I always make sure if this is a new lender we're working with that I'm familiar with, are you guys okay with month-to-month leases or that, because the more lenders that offer, the lenders that offer more like bank type rates that we work with, like ReadyCap, BoFi is now Axos or Axis, I'm saying that wrong, one of those names.
Axis.
Yeah, a lot of them are not okay with leases. The lenders we work with that offer these really good interest rates, like they want all these leases to be current. They don't want them to be expiring soon. So it's something you have to ask the lender. I will have to put this in the processing manual. I'm going to write myself a note. Other lenders we work with, Velocity doesn't care if they're month-to-month leases. Anchor Loans doesn't always care if they're month-to-month leases. Lima wants them to be current, but they haven't killed me on leases throughout this any of the loans we've done with them. But anyways, that's just something you're going to have to clarify with the lender as you're processing.
Is it worth mentioning that we don't want any photocopies from your phone?
Oh, to borrowers and they try to send you in documents?
Yeah, but I've had that recently where they've actually taken a picture of their bank statement with their phone and tried to send it to me.
I know. I know. You're right. There's so many things to mention to people. It's like you're trying to prep them to get married or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's a lot of things that, you know, lenders typically that we've always worked with in the past, like they want the actual documents scanned, like not JPEGs of them. You know, if someone's sending you a JPEG of their photo ID, I mean, you know, it's a photo ID. It's probably going to be sent. That's not a big deal. Or if it's like pictures of a property or something. But, you know, it's something you can ask the lender, because I know I've definitely been involved with deals with Velocity where, like, the person just, like, did not have access to a computer for whatever reason, and all they could do was send in all their files to me from their cell phone. And they allowed it. It wasn't the neatest set of documents or packages, but they were all there. So I would just ask the lender, Kill. Yeah.
I've just suggested that maybe they go to Staples or Office Max and have it done from there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And you know what? People do that to me all the time as well. I do have that conversation with people sometimes. You know, please email all these documents in. They need to be emailed. I need an actual scanned copy of the document. And what happens is if someone's going to do that to you, just be aware, like, the email it's going to come from is going to be a really weird email, and it almost looks like spam, and we already get these spam, you know, things that we all have been very aware not to click on because maybe someone's trying to get our information because we're a mortgage company. But yeah, I mean, if someone's going to do that, you know, just have them give you a heads up, because the generic emails from Staples or whatever the company is, they look very suspicious. Like, I've actually deleted them a couple of times by accident. We just did a loan, for a gentleman named Nicholas. He's one of Sensei's borrowers, and, that he didn't have access to a computer either. And he was going to some store and sending me this stuff. But once I figured out that this email address was where he was getting them faxed and emailed to me, I just put it in the background notes of the deal so I knew, like, when I got this email, it was okay to open up the attachments they were sending me. Does anyone else have any other questions about any of the documents in here? I mean, I know there's a million documents in here, but anything I could answer? All right. Yeah, just the biggest thing is, you know, when you're dealing with a file where there's a million documents like this, make these folders. I'm telling you, it's going to make your life so much easier. I used to not make folders like this, and I used to just keep everything in the file, and I was just making it harder on myself because, you know, it was harder for me to locate things when, you know, I would send stuff to lenders and, you know, for whatever reason, they say they didn't get it even though I know I sent it. And I'd have to resend it. So this just makes it so much easier when someone asks you for something again you've already sent, because that's going to happen to you a million times throughout the transaction. The title company will ask you for stuff that you've already sent, so will the lender, so will whoever else in the transaction. You can just easily find things. And you can make a folder for whatever you feel is irking you. Like, if a lot of times, so this wasn't a purchase deal, this was a refinance. But if it's a purchase and sales, like I've been involved in some purchase deals where there's like 5 or 6 or 7 different amendments to the purchase and sales agreement, and they're all addendums. So instead of just throwing them in the folder haphazardly, I'll make a folder for, like, I'll put PSA plus addendums, or just even PSA, and I know that the purchase sales agreement there, and then I know all the addendums are in there. But anything that's irking you that you know is really important, that you know you're probably going to get asked for again, just make a photo for it. Make your life easier. All right. That's really it. If you guys want to go back to My Drive, I uploaded a couple documents in here that are just some basic things, things that you're going to be handling a lot. You'll see there's a blank W-9 form. I think everyone's pretty much familiar with the W-9 form, but we need it from the borrower on basically every single transaction we do. And it would, you know, if the borrower is closing in an entity name, it's always the entity name on it, and then that entity's EIN number. If they're closing in their personal name, which, you know, we don't do a lot of commercial loans where someone's closing their personal name, but once in a while our lenders do allow that, it would be their personal name and then their Social Security number. I did put a document here, just the difference between SBA 504 and 7A. Again, we don't do many bank loans, but if you ever want to check it out one day, that's the difference. There's a sample draw schedule. That's, you know, for a rehab deal where they're planning out what the draws are going to be. That's just something in case, you know, a lender ever asks you for something like that and the borrower doesn't have one, you could just send them an example and they could copy it. A lot of our rehab lenders, though, don't need that. The only rehab lender we actually work with that will plan out the draws before closing is Templeview. The other rehab lenders we work with don't plan out how the draws are going to go down, and I always wonder about that. You know, like, is this going to become an issue after closing, or were they supposed to do something first, or I don't know. I've just kind of stayed out of it, but they don't really ask us for any type of finalized draw schedule. I mean, the way the other rehab lenders we work with do it is, you know, they just allow the borrower to start the work as they see fit. And then, again, when the site inspector comes out, which is going to cost the borrower $200 typically, the site inspector just verifies what's been done. I'm not sure how they really determine what dollar amount they're going to reimburse the borrower for, but somehow that's determined between the site inspector and the borrower. Sometimes you'll be asked for bios. I just put an example of a bio that someone sent me on a deal a long time ago. A lot of our rehab lenders, they don't even ask for bios anymore. They just want, you know, copies of the HUD ones, or usually that's it. The settlement statement's just to prove that, you know, their personal name or their entity name is on there and that's their experience. Ryan, you asked me the other day, I think, how to get a tax ID, how to explain to someone. And
yep,
that's
actually,
yep, that's how to do it right there. Someone is not aware. I just put a rent roll in here. You're going to see a lot of rent roll forms. A lot of lenders have their own rent roll forms, but they all are very, very similar looking, like this. They all should clearly go over the tenant's name, you know, the unit number. Square footage is a big thing all of our lenders want to see typically on a rent roll. And I didn't catch on to that for a very long time. But some of our lenders who do this like local market rent thing when the units aren't rented out, they are so big on the square footage because they're comparing that rent to other units that are the same square footage. So I've had to literally like redo rent rolls and add square footage in there just to make the lender happy, which wastes a lot of my time. So if you tell the borrower that you need it from day one, then that's on them. It should clearly say the lease start date and the lease end date. All of these things are on our blanket loan application as well, but I don't think there's a square footage section on there, actually. Maybe we should add that. I'll write myself a note.
I've got a rent roll that I created from that Lima One spreadsheet when I created the spreadsheet for blanket stuff, too. And
yeah,
it also doesn't say Wells Fargo on it, and it also allows you to type right on it as opposed to this one. Do you want me to upload it?
Can you add square footage to it, or does it already have that on there?
It has
square footage. The fourth column.
Yeah, I understand. I'm saying our blanket loan application that we should add a square footage section to it if it doesn't have one, because
Our blanket form has a square footage question column on it.
Oh, it does? Okay.
Yeah.
It's up to you, Ryan. If you want to upload that one, you can, or I have a copy, too. I can upload it. And then, obviously, the rent roll is going to go over the rent, you know. So it's pretty basic. This is just an example of one. You know, people will send you different kinds. A lot of times people will just send you, like, a rent roll that maybe they have in Excel where it's just the tenant's names and then what they pay for rent. You can tell them, hey, I'm going to try to use this, but the lender may want may have their own rent roll in more specific form that goes over, again, these other things that are very important for them to know, start and end date. I've been involved in loans where, again, I've had so many leases, just like Andrew George's file. And just so you know, you also have to go, when you get the leases, you should go through and make sure they match up with the rent roll. If the lender requires you to have a rent roll in the file, this is for rental loans, properties that are already rented out. Some of our lenders don't require actually that we submit a rent roll, but you know, if you do need one, it's just a good way to keep an organization of what are these tenants paying, what are the leases, stuff like that. So, all right, let's go to that. I put a document there for credit check total. That's where we used to refer people to get their credit checked because we don't run credit here. Again, we don't run credit here, and I know I went over that, but I just want to say it again because people call in sometimes and are convinced we ran their credit, or sometimes people send me these crazy emails like, you ran my credit, and I'm like, no, we did not. We do not run credit here, and I know for a fact because I have never signed us up for a service that will allow us to do that. And honestly, the real reason is, it would cost us $30 per borrower to run their credit, and I'm not going to put that expense on the company just to issue someone a simple quote. You know, that's what a quote is. If we issued you a free quote, you know, you did have to give us some information in order to get the quote, but that's how quotes work. Obviously, everyone needs information to give you a quote. But we don't run credit here. We were referring people to Credit Check Total for a long time. And this printout actually shows them how to download a copy of the report. And it's a really nice report that it issues. But, you know, I was just hearing from people because you can sign up for the service for $1, but you have to cancel within 7 days or they charge you $30, and it's like a monthly service. So I just was hearing from people. It was so, so hard for them to cancel. They were getting frustrated. So I've stopped referring people to Credit Check Total. And just have said to them, you know, if you have any type of credit reporting service, something you can give me to show where your credit scores are so I can, you know, get the pre-approval letter from the lender if they need that. Just anyways, I've just been getting something from them. If they absolutely have no credit check service or can't get a hold of their FICO scores, I mean, I've even been accepting, like, the free credit report stuff, you know, something. But if they absolutely have nothing, what you can say, if you're trying to get them an actual real mortgage, like more of a more formal mortgage pre-approval, not just a quote that we issue. You could just, you know, say to the lender, hey, if I get your loan application filled out for you and they sign it and everything, could, you know, are you then authorized to run credit? Like, can you run their credit and let us know where it came back at? Ryan pointed out something really good the other day, though. If you're going to give someone a loan application with a lender's name on it, we have to have a fee agreement on them because we're not just going to connect them with the lender and, you know, do coordinating, and then they go around us. Everything else in here is pretty standard. There's a 1003 form in here. Some of our commercial lenders, and I know this can be confusing, especially for the new people on the phone, but some of our commercial lenders, that is actually their loan application, a 1003 form. And you can find this form on the IRS's website or just a lot of generic forms we use in lending. If you just Google the name of the form, you can usually find some type of printout, some form you can download. One of the lenders we were working with said something to me the other day, like the 1003 form I had was old, and it's not from the year 2008, so I have to just Google a new one and find a new one. But some of the lenders we work with, like Apex and Velocity, this is actually their loan application. Just so everyone's aware, I never, ever, ever fill out a loan application for a borrower, like, unless it's something like incredibly simple that's basically just basically almost our intake form and just some simple questions. Then I wouldn't mind doing that. But this 1003 is like 4 pages long. It's, I know there's a lot of residential mortgage brokers that literally sit and do this with people and go through the 1003 with them. I never do that. We just don't have time to do that. It's obviously your judgment, but, you know, we don't charge any type of pre-processing fee or anything like that. So in my head, it's their obligation to get these things to us. If it needs to be corrected, I could certainly help them correct it, but they have to start it at least. So the big things that are big on 1003, the type of mortgage, they don't have to fill in that section at all. They really just going to start with the property address. And there is a section on here usually that actually asks for their the applicant's name. I'm not seeing that on here. But really, is that the top? Okay.
And in fact, I just uploaded my version, so it's right next to it there in the Google Docs. Mine is actually you can print, instead of having to print it out and handwrite it.
Mm-hmm. You can type right on it. Editable?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you want to use the editable ones because that's better.
It looks like somebody else just put another one in.
Yeah.
Now we have three of them.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, the main parts you start filling this out, I really like section two, besides, of course, the name. The big things that I always get hit on that people don't fill out that I think Dave from Velocity has told me like a million times. He's probably so tired of telling me this. But he always will tell me, you know, make sure the purpose of the loan's checked. Make sure, you know, all of section two should be filled out. And then he always tells me that the borrower section, people always don't list if they're married or not. Sometimes they don't put their full social security number or home number, date of birth. The big thing for Velocity is they always want to know if did they own or rent, because they don't always allow you just to rent on a program that they're offering. So I miss it sometimes too, like someone didn't check the owner rent or the married or unmarried or whatever, but they're always on me about that. Obviously, if someone gives me a 1003 and they've filled out like basically everything and they didn't check the owner rent, I'm not going to say to them, hey, check this and send it back. I just call them and say, hey, do you own or rent? I need to know, and I'll check it for them. And then I scan it into my computer and email it to lender. Employment information, they always want that filled out. That is lower on page one. And really all of this they want filled out. I see people on the liability side of the assets and liabilities. For liabilities, you know, people can write C credit report, but obviously on your credit report, we don't know what your assets are, so you do have to fill out the asset side. Schedule of real estate, yep, they got to fill that out. Declarations is always very important. They have to answer yes or no to all these questions. And you really want to pay attention to that, too, when someone sends this to you, because some of these things are big things. And some of these questions are how I've created our intake forms. Number A, are there any outstanding judgments against you? You know, if they say yes and we're not aware of that, that's something we need to figure out right away. Like, what type of judgment do you have against you? Are you party to a lawsuit? That's pretty much a deal killer if they check yes there. The bankruptcy thing. You know, if they say they've been delinquent on a loan, which resulted in a foreclosure, that could, you know, kill the loan. Just depends how long ago it was. I think Velocity allows, like, that, you know, two prior years. The other thing you want to pay attention to, are you a U.S. citizen? Are you a permanent resident alien? I've had people throw me off with that where I thought they were a U.S. citizen. So that's really a 1003. That's the gist of it. And I think we're good. The only other thing I want to go over real quick, and then we will knock out the title and insurance stuff really quick, is I did upload our fee agreement here, the new version. I know we tried going over it briefly yesterday, but I had the old version in there. So if you click on that, this is our new fee agreement. I've just, again, kind of over-explained things, but as you can see, I always put the date. I always put the company name first, then the borrower's name. And the reason whoever's going to PG the loan, the reason I do it like that is because these are commercial loans, and I've done it the opposite way where I put the borrower's name first and then the company name, and borrowers have came back to me and been like, oh, why'd you do that? Well, I'm not closing in my personal name, so I want the fee agreement to say my, you know, my company name on it. So anyways, I just changed it. Property address. I even highlighted in red the not just to let people know. I just reworded. I said that if the client finds funding on their own without the consultation help of 11 Capital, the client is not liable to pay 11 Capital a fee. And just furthermore explained it. Furthermore, if 11 Capital connects the client with a lender that does not end up funding their loan, the client is not liable to pay us a fee. I even changed this actually to be non-exclusive. And if they want to shop us, they can. I mean, to be honest with you guys, when most people are going down this process with us and they've paid for an appraisal, at that point, the shopping's over. Most people are, well, not most people, I shouldn't say that. A lot of lenders don't accept other lenders' appraisals. They have a certain way they want them ordered and stuff. So it'd be silly for them to continue the shopping process because they're probably going to have to go pay for a new appraisal with that lender. But, you know, if they want to, they can. Obviously, they have to get us a good amount of documents, too, throughout this process. So for them to be sending in all documents and then still shopping and the next lender might need a different set of documents, I mean, they're just putting more work on themselves, but whatever. The paragraph under that, where it says under line 11, capital shall earn a blank fee to broker. Wait, 11 capital shall earn a blank fee. Okay, to broker this transaction, sorry. We are just now doing it. We used to always do a percentage. Ryan brought up a good point a couple weeks ago. Let's just do the flat fee. So we're just entering the actual fee. Okay. That's it. If you want to just go through and read it, if you have any questions, just shoot me an email. Kind of under where we list the fee, I just made it even more clear that the client gives Love and Capital the right to represent them and gives authorization for any lender to talk to us about any aspect of their loan. I added that in there because of something a lender told me a long time ago, or they couldn't tell me why the loan was denied because my fee agreement didn't say they were allowed to disclose that to me. So I just changed that. And then I just, you know, put that we're going to be handling their sensitive documentation. And, you know, there are times where the title company comes to me all the time and asks me for things. And, you know, I send it to them, obviously, because they need it to get the deal done. But I just wanted to further explain that, you know, you're aware I'm going to have to send the title company things that you're sending me just so they don't get upset that I'm sending their sensitive information somewhere. Even though all of our borrowers pick, this is one reason why I have our borrowers pick what title company they want to use. I never recommend a title company. I've gotten caught up in that sometimes trying to help people, and I recommend them a title company, and then, you know, say there's a lien on the property they weren't aware of or something, and the borrower will call me upset, well, your title company found this, and, you know, it's like any title company would have found it. But, you know, I just kind of stay out of that because the title process can be frustrating for people. So, you know, if any liens or anything comes up, you know, obviously any title company should have discovered all the same things. But, you know, I just tell them, you know, this is the title company you told us to use. You know, or if for some reason they can't get it done or they decide to not shore the policy for whatever reason, they feel the file is too risky. I've had title companies tell me that. Actually, I just had a long conversation last night at 6:45 with the title company about this Anderson file I've been working on. And the title company doesn't want to insure the policy because their entity docs are very sloppy. They're all over the place. Sometimes title companies decide not to do the deal. So you just be careful who you refer to somebody. If someone ever wants an insurance referral, I usually refer people to NERG Guard, and I can give you guys their contact information. But if I were you, I would stay out of that referral for any title company because I always tell clients, I'm like, it's your right to pick whoever you want to use. We're not going to delegate that process. So that's really it. Does anyone have any questions about these docs?
I like on the fee agreement that you're telling people they can continue to shop. I think that's kind of actually a sign of strength. Would it be unprofessional though to put in parentheses something like, hey, good luck finding anybody better than us?
I was thinking about it when I was writing this. I was like, good luck with that. You know, but you know, I changed it, Ryan, because I know ours used to be exclusive and people would kind of get uppity about that. And I just thought about it, and I was like, you know what? Who cares? Like, I was thinking the same thing, actually, when I was rewording this. Like, go ahead. You know, go try to get another quote, and then you have to submit that lender that loan application and their set of docs. And obviously, I'm not going to help them do that because I'm thinking we're moving forward on this deal or whoever the processor is. But I just made it, like, very clear that unless the deal closes on the day of closing, that's when we get our fee, you know? And I highlighted the not in red, so they pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm. Are there any vendors who won't accept a 1003?
Yeah, it's just some lenders that commercial lenders we work with, a 1003 is their loan application, and I know that can kind of be confusing because a 1003, on the top of it, it says a residential loan application. And again, we're doing a commercial loan. So a lot of times when I need a 1003 for that lender, if they request that, I actually explain to them in the document list, I know this says residential loan application on it, but this is actually this commercial lender's loan application. I just let them know beforehand. But a lot of, just so you know, besides like Apex, Velocity, we don't really work with any other lenders that want a 1003. Like every other lender wants their own loan application. They all have their own loan application. Or, I mean, I've had rehab lenders, smaller rehab lenders I've worked with in the past that actually didn't have a loan application, but they would always want a personal financial statement. Most commercial lenders want a personal financial statement, not a 1003. All the permanent financing lenders, like, you know, Cherrywood, you know, ReadyCap, I can't say Bofi's new name, but you guys know who I'm talking about. In general, they all want a personal financial statement. And usually rehab lenders do too. And some of the personal financial statements are, sometimes they're built into the lender's application, but very few commercial lenders we work with actually want a 1003. Did I answer your question?
Well, I think so. It really feels like the personal financial statement is almost built into the 1003.
It is. It is kind of. Yeah, you'll see the section where they're listing the assets and liabilities. And the assets, you know, the lender's looking for, you know, how much cash they have on hand, you know, what other assets do they have.
Yeah. It asks to list their real estate owned. So it almost seems like, why wouldn't a lender accept a 1003? I know some lenders who have their own form, or they'll take a 1003. It'll be an either or. So I guess my thought process was, why wouldn't we just start off with a 1003?
Because not all lenders want them as their loan application.
Okay.
So that you would just, if you're filling one out and the lender doesn't accept that, you're just wasting your time.
Right.
You know,
okay,
it has to. Yeah, it has to be what that lender wants. And just so you know, lenders like have their uniform forms just because, just like us, they're just reviewing paperwork so much throughout the day that if you're constantly reviewing the same thing, you're going to be quicker. You're going to know what things you really have to check with than if you're trying to review all different types of applications, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, all of our lenders typically all have their actual own, like, loan application that eventually needs to be filled out. Only Velocity and Apex are the only lenders that we work with, really, that ever asks us for a 1003. And I think even Velocity now has their own loan application, right, Marty? Because that's what you did on Elliott's deals.
Yep, at least for the rehab.
Yeah, I did. We didn't even fill out the 1003 on those because
I
didn't have a copy.
Right.
All right. Did anyone have any other questions about docs? I know we're coming up here on the hour, and I just want to run through the insurance real quick and the title. All right, so if you guys just pull up the processing manual on page 8, I kind of start going over this stuff. Let me just load up here. Yeah, insurance request starts on the bottom of page. Oh, that's insurance. Sorry, I'm going to start with title first. Title starts on the bottom of page 8, and it's under processing stage 2. I know this thing's really disorganized. I am going to make it look so much prettier. I just have to get, like, my thoughts out and fully explain everything, and then I'll go back and revise this whole entire thing and make it look pretty. But if you start on page 8, you'll see at the very bottom, it's number 2. It says title insurance order. One thing I want to just point out real quick, and we'll whip through this really quick, is we don't start coordinating with someone's third party. Obviously, we sell people on the fact that, hey, not only are we, you know, going to place your loan with the best lender that, you know, obviously everyone wants to get the best quote in the world. That's, everyone wants the lowest interest rate, the lowest points. I get it. If I was a real estate investor, I'd want the same thing. But, you know, being a broker and being on the other side and working with all those lenders we work with, sometimes I have to tell people, I also need to place your lender with a loan, your loan with a lender that's actually going to get it done. You know, I mean, I've been involved where this company is giving me a better quote than the other company, but I know this lender over here, maybe with the higher interest rate, borrower doesn't want to hear that. This company is going to get it done in 2 weeks. This other one over here, not so sure about them. You know, so, you know, it is also just advising people, but we don't start coordinating with any third parties, just so everyone's aware, until an appraisal is ordered. And all of our appraisals, I'm just trying to think if there's a difference between our rehab lenders and our permanent lenders, but it's really the same way. You know, I really don't start communicating with third parties until that person pays for an appraisal, and that's just from learning this the hard way. I've been in transactions where, you know, someone really needed to rush, they needed me to help them put in a title request, they weren't sure exactly what to ask the title company for, what docs they needed, and I have, and then all of a sudden they backed out the deal and decided not to do the deal, and here the title company's emailing me like a million times on a deal that is not even a deal anymore, you know? So that's just my word of advice to you. You're going to have clients, especially on rehab deals, because everybody wants to close like yesterday on a rehab deal. Most rehab deals take 2 weeks to get done. And that's just because the lenders we work with require an appraisal, basically. Basically all of them require an appraisal. And, you know, the title work needs to be done. You need proof of insurance. We need all the documents from them. We may need documents from their contractor. That doesn't all just happen in, you know, a couple of days. It takes people time to get things in. So you will have title companies on rehab deals just randomly email you. The borrower is going to shove the title company at you, especially if the title company is rushing the borrower because they have to close really soon. And you're going to have to email back and just let them know. I mean, you can give them some basic information, but just be careful what you get yourself wrapped into. You know, if someone has, just so you know, if someone has not signed a fee agreement, there is no way I will start coordinating with their title company if they've just shoved their title company at me and they want me to start coordinating with them, and yet I don't even have anything saying we're representing you. So I definitely won't do that, but sometimes someone has signed a fee agreement, they're working on the docs, you know, they do shove their title company at me and they're like, I need to put in the title request now. They need to know who the lender is, what the loan amount is, you know, all that stuff that we're going to go over the title companies need. You know, and I will do anything for anyone to get their deal done. If I have a good feeling about them, I know I've talked to them, I know they're working on their docs, I know they're trying to rush, I'll just put in the title request, even if they haven't paid for the appraisal. But I'm always on the same page with all these title companies, and I would let them clearly know where we're at in the transaction. So if you're submitting a title request and the appraisal hasn't been paid for, that's something you want to mention in the email to the title company. You know, the appraisal has not been ordered yet on this file, and I'm waiting for these documents from the buyer in order to get their appraisal order, because this is what the lender requires to approve to get their appraisal order. Just let them know, because sometimes, you know, people in the business are going to come at you, and this is what people do to me every single day. And you have to have a thick skin. You have to be able to explain yourself. You know, sometimes these title companies will come at you and, you know, just say, you know, well, why is this file not moving quick enough, or why can't we close, or what's going on with your lender? And you have to let them know, I'm waiting on this from the borrower. They're very aware this is what I've needed from day one before they even signed the fee agreement. So when they send that to me, I will go through it and get it over to the lender, and then we can get the appraisal ordered. But, you know, we're not there yet. So just, you know, don't ever let anyone frazzle you. Just tell them where we're at in the transaction. So when you're submitting a title insurance order, the title of the email should always be title request or title order, whatever you want to call it. I always just do title request. You know, I don't want to seem like I'm demanding something of the title company. I always put the property address, and then I put the borrower's name in the end in parentheses, because when they respond, I need to know, because we track everything here by the borrower's name. So a lot of the times when our lenders are emailing back and forth about deals or title companies, they all will have their like loan number in the email signature, property address. Sometimes the title company has their file number in there. I always just at the end hook on the borrower's name, so I know what we're talking about as well, because we don't track things here by a property address. I don't think our CRM has the ability to just type in a property address and I can figure out who the borrower is on there. Maybe it does, but that's just not how it generally works in our CRM. So anyways, just do that to keep yourself organized. This is just how I introduced myself to a title company. This was actually the title request I put in for Roger Menesis, who's one of our IAPs, and I think we closed his deal a week or two ago. But this is how I introduced myself. You know, usually what I do is I will underline refinance or purchase. Whatever type of transaction it is, I always make that very clear. Like, this is a purchase plus rehab transaction. Or, like, because some title companies, some title companies, when they hear the word rehab, they actually want this like extra policy. They want these extra documents filled out because construction is happening to the property. So you want to let them know, like, this is a refinance plus rehab transaction, a purchase plus rehab, or this is a ground up construction, refinance or purchase, whether they own the land or not. You have to let them know. I'm telling you, that's really important. And I have to maybe somehow make a line item under here to just denote what type of transaction it is, so it's more clear. Again, I just always put the property address in there because most title companies track everything by the address, just so everyone's aware. If you call into a title company and you, hey, I'm calling about 1514 West 8th Street, they know what it is. If a lot of times I will call into title companies and I'll mention like the borrower's name and they're like, who's that? What's the address? So I always just put it right in there. I just let them know who the clients are on the transaction, that it's a commercial/investment loan and they must close in the entity name. You have to let the title companies know that, what the entity name is, and make sure it's the exact spelling. So you're going to have to go to the entity docs, check it out, make sure that's the exact same spelling. Title companies always need a copy of the operating agreement, and they always typically want a copy of the certificate of good standing as well. You don't have to send the EIN or the state articles unless they ask you. They never ask me for that. They always just ask me for a copy of the operating agreement and certificate of good standing. I let them know who the direct lender is on the transaction. Templeview, the way we work with them is, you know, sometimes they will help me put in a title request, and their people always reach out to the title company too. Sometimes they don't. They just, like, let us do it. Other lenders we work with, just so you know, just don't even coordinate with title companies for you, such as Velocity. They will not coordinate with the title company. So you're the one who's really going to be steering the title company the whole entire time on what's going on. They'll reach out to the title company, of course, when the loan comes to a closing point, but prior to that, they don't, and they don't put in title requests. That's the broker's job. So, again, you're going to have to word these things different, but you know, the last line of that subject or that email, you know, could have been, you know, attached is the operating agreement and the certificate of good standing, but I didn't have them at the time, so I just let them know I would give them to her when I got them. Obviously, with the purchase agreement, you should attach a copy of the purchase and sales agreement, but honestly, the title company should already have that if they're the title company on the transaction. But just, I always see the lenders do it, so they must know what they're doing. I just asked them, please confirm that you've gotten this email. You always want to put in a title request as soon as the appraisal is ordered. Basically as soon as an appraisal is ordered, you always want to put in a title request with the title company, like that day. It's really important. So the title companies always need to know these things, the bullet points. They need to know what the exact loan amount is going to be. They need to know every lender we work with has a mortgagee clause, and they're all different, and they look like number two. It's also there below. It's the wording of – it's usually their company name, these weird letters put together. I don't know why they look like that, but they all look like that. Make sure you get that exactly from the lender, what that is. A lot of lenders like Velocity Velocity on every deal, when it gets into processing, the processor will actually send you like their insurance requirements. And if you ask them, sometimes they'll send you like a document that goes over their title requirements. We've done so many closings with them that I have all this stuff in all of our CRM for every lender. So for Templeview, I have their title request in there, their insurance request, for Velocity, for all of them. And it enables us to act faster because I don't have to wait for them to send me instructions on how to do it because I already know how to do it. So just put that, always put the company name again, their close again, make sure it's spelled exactly correct. If you don't have the entity docs yet, you're going to have to go off of our intake form. And these are typically the documents that lenders always want from title companies. They want a title commitment. That's a big, long report. It just goes over if there's any liens against this property from whatever year. I don't usually review these things probably as much as I should. When the agent, you know, sends some type of preliminary report, which sometimes a lot of times they have right off the bat, I'm just hoping, like, they would say, like, hey, there's there's, you know, you should know that, you know, there's some liens on this property. You're going to have to be cleared prior to closing. A lot of times the agents will say that, but sometimes they don't, and you really should look at it. There's a section that goes over, like, liens, judgments. You guys could even look at some of the title reports in the deals that are in the Google Drive. They're long. They're very lengthy things. And I've seen all kinds of things come up on there, not just, you know, they're always searching if there's any liens or judgments on the entity's name, but also the borrower's personal name. I've seen things just come up on their personal name. Obviously, the property address. They're trying to find out if anything is attached to this property that, you know, needs to be paid off prior to closing. So CPL just stands for Closing Protection Letter. I should have spelled that out, but that's a letter that every lender wants from the title company prior to closing. E&O is a copy of their E&O insurance they always have to send over. Preliminary HUD, HUD-1, closing statement, settlement statement. I see a lot of this back and forth with our lenders where, and the title companies will always ask you too, like, oh, do you need a HUD or do you need a CD? All of our lenders always ask for a HUD, definitely on the 1-4 unit properties. But on the pure commercial ones, I think generally the rule is just to do a CD, which stands for closing disclosure, or a settlement statement. So that's kind of the difference in property type where I see them going back and forth on that. Wiring instructions. I always just let the title company know who's the point of contact to set up for closing. You know, who should you call? And just so you know, some of these title companies, they just don't reach out to people for whatever reason. I've had it happen to me so many times. And then, you know, I'm reaching out to the borrower, you know, did the title company call you for closing? Oh, no, they never called me, and your closing's tomorrow. So I'll call a title company. Closing's supposed to be tomorrow. When is the client supposed to come in? What location are they supposed to go to? Just make sure you figure that out. And then I always give them an estimated closing date of the file. I just put an example there. At the bottom, I put, again, the lender's mortgagee clause. And then I always put the loan number on the file, too. And you could even make that, like, its own section if you want. But these are the key things they always need, every title company needs. If anyone ever asks you to put in a title request, all you need to do is copy and paste this. Now, obviously, the information is going to change every single time. The borrower is different. The company name is different. The estimated loan amount is different. I always let the title companies know this is an estimated loan amount. You know, when the appraisal comes back, a loan amount will be finalized. But I just let them know that because I don't want them to think this is the finalized loan amount and them to be creating documents off of that loan amount when it's going to change. Most likely it's going to change when the appraisal comes back. So that's really it. All you would have to do is copy and paste this. You really don't need to know what you're doing. This is just what the title company needs to know so they can collect their documents that are needed for the lender. And we already went over, always send them a copy of the operating agreement, certificate of good standing. I usually attach a copy of the borrower's ID just in case they need it. I don't really know if they do, but I usually send it to them. And then obviously purchase sales agreement, you know, attach the purchase. If it's a refinance, if you have a copy of the payoff balance, if the borrower sent it to you, you know, send it to them. If you don't, it's not that big of a deal. It depends if the lender needs it for a pre-approval or letter or not. But a lot of times title companies will reach out and get the payoff from whoever the payoff lender is, if there is one. But just another thing I should have mentioned, I always confirm that with the title company too. We have a no trust policy here. You're going to have to continue with the no trust policy. I always ask the title company, are you going to reach out to get the payoff or do you need me to do that? Because you don't ever want to assume, you know, that they're going to just do something because a lot of times they don't if it wasn't agreed upon. And then no one has a payoff and we're trying to close, but we don't know how much money to pay off the payoff lender. It's a really silly reason to be holding a closing. Just so everyone's aware, if you are the person that has to request the payoff from the payoff lender, there's usually an email that you use to request that from the payoff lender, and you're going to have to, again, use the entity name, the property address, the borrower's name, put a lot of references in the email. Always copy the borrower so they can confirm that, you know, we're allowed to be requesting this on their behalf. But sometimes it takes 3 to 4 days, 3 to 4 business days for to get that payoff letter. So again, always plan ahead. Don't be trying to get a payoff letter if it's a refinance transaction, there's debt, 2 days prior to closing, And then the payoff lender says, well, I'm sorry, we're backed up. We can't get that to you for 4 business days. I've been there several times. And it's like, that's the last thing you need to close, and you can't close because you can't get the payoff lender letter in time. So just don't do that. Always try to plan ahead. And that's it. I just put in here, you know, there's usually an email that title companies, like a lot of larger title companies will have like an orders at email and then, you know, their company name or requests or, you know, usually there's an email sometimes that people that they have to get title orders. Sometimes it's just the actual agent that they're dealing with. So just so you know. And the same thing for the payoff lenders. Usually there's a certain email you got to email in for that as well. Okay, does anyone have any questions about that? That's really the gist of just putting in a title order. It's not anything too complicated. Honestly, sometimes I don't even know. I mean, I understand what I'm doing, but I'm not a title agent, so I don't know everything that their job entails. And you know, but I've talked to a lot of title agents where they're at the county courthouse, they're digging in records and boxes to find this and that, and I'm like, oh my God. Good thing that's you and not me, because I wouldn't want to have to be going back and forth to these buildings. But that's how you put in the title request. That's everything they need to know. Insurance request is pretty simple too, but I like to let that's why we always ask for, you know, title rep's contact info, name, email, phone number, and the insurance rep, because I like to let them know early on in the transaction. Typically after the appraisal is ordered, this is when I, you know, like that day or the next day, I email the insurance agent as well. I have to elaborate a little bit more on this. I didn't have time, but obviously the same thing for the email subject. And I put insurance request, property address, and then the name of the borrower. And this is just an example email of, you know, what I send people. You can see I underlined the same thing, refinance. This was a refinance plus rehab transaction. I let them know what type of deal this is, and insurance agents need to know that. They need to know, is construction happening to this house or not? This is actually a different type of insurance policy. A lot of lenders, I mean, any lender, if you're confused on what the insurance requirements are, just ask them. Ask the processor, can you send me your insurance requirements? You know, I'm trying to, you know, help the borrower work with their insurance agent to make sure we're getting the right policy for you, because insurance is still something very confusing to me. There's so many different types of insurance policies out there, and there's, you know, insurance brokers just like us who shop for the best, you know, insurance policy for their client. And then there's direct insurance companies. So, again, I just always give them the information they need to know so they can get the right policy together. But whenever they do send me, like, a copy of the deck page, the proof of insurance page, which we went over what that looks like yesterday, I always take that and I send it to the lender, their processor, and I say, can you verify that this is, like, accurate, that this is everything that you need on here is on here. I'm getting much better at going through them myself and finding, okay, yeah, that says that's, you know, that amount of coverage, that looks good, start and end date is good. I see the date up there on the top right-hand corner is obviously a recent date. I got the entity name on there, the loan number, the lender's mortgagee clause. This looks really good to me, but even then, you know, I'm not, you know, an underwriter or, you know, even a processor that works for a lender. I still send it to a lender with a copy of the invoice and say, hey, can you please verify this is correct? And I usually copy the insurance agent and I just let them know, if you need any revisions to this, can you please reply to all? And insurance agents on here, and we'll get, you know, we'll get it figured out. So again, I just put the address in there. I always let them know who the direct lender is on the file. They don't really need to know who the members are of the entity. Usually, actually, I delete that now. This is just an email I had that I saved where I can copy and paste these things, so I'm not typing out, you know, the same thing every single time I need to contact an insurance agent for something. Again, I always put in there, please confirm if you received this email. I always attach the lender's insurance requirements. Most of our lenders have a, you know, like a Word doc, some kind of printout, something that goes over their insurance requirements. This is just what Templeview always wants. And typically the coverage amount is just whatever the loan amount is on the property. So obviously the property is worth more, you know, but the lender just wants to make sure they have enough coverage, you know, for at least the loan amount that they're lending against the property. you know, it might be smart if the borrower wanted to actually cover the whole entire value of the property in case it got taken away, but they don't have to. So that's really the borrower's discretion. Do you want to insure it for more? You can, but you just can't insure it for less than this number, and that's typically the loan amount. Lima One, though, is actually pretty specific on their insurance requirements. They actually want the property insured for the full value of the property, which, again, does up the cost of the insurance for the borrower. So I always try to reach out to their insurance agents on those deals pretty quickly because, you know, sometimes that's going to up the cost of their insurance, and that could actually throw off, like on the rental loans, that might actually throw off their debt service coverage ratio a little bit. So I always try to reach out pretty quickly just to see, like, what kind of insurance do they have, and, look, here's what this lender needs. Is that changing their current policy at all? Because I don't know what they currently have. I just let them know the entity name again. You always want to put the lender's mortgagee clause in there. Contact info for the borrower. I should have put Mark's email and address in there as well. I usually do. I don't know why it's not copied and pasted. Loan number. And then you also have to let them know this was a rehab deal. So this is a 12-month loan. It's a 12-month interest-only loan. So on any rehab loan, if it's 12 months, if it's, you know, usually they're all 12 months. Sometimes we do 6-month rehab loans, short-term loans, maybe even 18 months. The policy has to be for the length of the loan. So, like Temple View, what they require now is they only require actually 3 months of insurance or paid in full at closing. Most lenders require the whole 12-month policy is paid in full at closing. And sometimes people can get a little upset about that because they're like, well, I plan to rehab it and sell it in 6 months, but I had to pay for a 12-month policy. But most insurance carriers, for whatever insurance you did not use, they will reimburse you. I understand it is a little bit of a process, but, you know, they typically do reimburse you for that unused insurance. So let people know. But with Temple View, you know, if their lender only requires 3 months to pay at closing, which that's just a unique thing Temple View does. None of our other lenders really do that. I always let the insurance agent know now only 3 months need to be paid by the day of closing, but I let them know I still need a 12-month policy. And I've had insurance agents call me and say, well, hey, according to my underwriting criteria, I can't issue you a 12-month policy if I don't have paid in 12 months. I can't just collect 3 months and issue you a 12-month policy. I've had other insurance agents say, that's fine. We can do that. Not a problem. Again, I don't know the difference why one agent can do it, what agent can't, but I'm assuming it's part of their underwriting criteria and how they issue insurance policies. So there's all different insurance companies. Again, I usually just have the borrower tell me who they want to use for insurance. I do refer NERG Guard because they're really great. They have a lot of customers, and I found out through them from a lot of our borrowers. They work pretty quickly. But that's it. One thing I just confirmed with the agent that, you know, they understand that this has to be in the entity name. The insurance is going to be in the entity's name, just like the title documents are, the mortgage documents are. All of it must match up. And I've had insurance agents tell me last minute, oh, we don't issue insurance in entity names. We only issue insurance in personal names. And I'm like, well, why did you tell me that like 2 weeks ago when I emailed you and now we're getting ready to close? So that person then has to go and find another insurance agent. But just make sure they understand that we need the insurance in this entity's name. And you may get that response sometimes depending on what that insurance company does. That they can either do that or they can't. If they can't put in the entity name, and just ask them, can you refer me to someone that does? You guys have a different branch? Or just let the borrower know, and hey, we need to figure this out now before closing happens. So that's really all it about insurance. Did anyone have any questions? All right. Does anyone have any questions today about our training at all? All right, guys.
I'm sorry. I have one. This is Dana.
Yep. Go ahead.
And this goes back to having people on the document or on the company. When people bring in someone to prove experience, they bring someone inside their company, do they need to partner with the company or do they just need to partner with the person and then provide the company documents for both companies? They're bringing someone in with their experience inside their company so that their company can get the experience.
Yeah, I understand. So, like on a rehab deal, like kind of how we do with Temple View, where you can kind of like piece people together in the transaction. They're one of the only ones that say no that lets us do stuff like that. Like, you can have a company full of four people, and maybe you just created the company, and one person actually has the credit that passes, one person has the experience. Like, they'll just let you pick things from each people to use and things not to use, which is not how really any of our other lenders work. You know, those people have to already be a certain percentage of the company and have that experience. But, so if someone's bringing someone into their company for the experience requirement, maybe it's a ground up construction deal or a rehab deal, that person has to actually be legally added to the entity, and they're going to have to amend their operating agreement showing what percentage that person is of their entity. They can
partner with the person. They can partner with the person, and not the company. They can bring the company. They don't need to bring the company in for a piece of that. They just bring in the owner of the company. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so like on every transaction, you know, there's certain, like, there might be two members of the entity, three members, four. It doesn't really matter, maybe just one. One thing I just want to say to you is commercial loans can only close in one entity name, you know?
Okay.
So I see why we get confused about this a lot, where they do that. They try to merge their entities somehow, or they'll send me an operating agreement where this entity is partnering with this entity for this amount of time. And I always tell them, like, this is not going to work. You can't do that. You know, the lender's only going to close this thing in one entity name. So what I say to them is just figure out the entity name you guys want to close in.
So do a single purpose entity. That's what I end up telling them. They get so confusing.
They can create a new entity. Like, say they have a company name that they usually close in all the time, and they feel uncomfortable just adding some random person they met to their entity that they've had for 10 years. I 100% understand that. Don't do that. Create a new entity. You know, you just have to go onto your state's website, go into the business section, file your state articles. You can create an EIN document right on the IRS's website in a second.
Right.
And it prints out right there for you. You can create your own operating agreement. You know, actually in the document checklist that I uploaded today, I actually did upload a folder in there called Example Entity Docs. But I always tell people, if you're unsure how to create an operating agreement, just Google. Like, I Google all the time, like, Illinois' operating agreement.
Right, me too.
Yeah, and that, whatever example pops up, I just download that. I send it to the bar, and I'm just like, fill this out. You guys fill this out. Make sure there's, you know, percentage. Obviously, make sure you both sign it. There's two members of the entity or however many people. And make sure in there it denotes everyone's percentage of ownership, because the lenders will always ask you that when you get into underwriting. But, yeah, you can create an entity. I mean, it takes a little bit of time, you know, but, again, if we just address these things, you know, usually something like that comes up from day one when you start collecting documents from people, because, you know, it definitely comes up in part one of the processing steps, because, you know, on the lender's loan application, a lot of times they have to write the entity name they're closing in, you know. So if someone sends me back a loan application and it's like ABC company is partnering with XYZ, I always let them know you can't do that. It has to just one entity name, because all these documents we're going to need are going to be in that one entity's name. They, you know, insurance agents aren't going to issue proof of insurance in two entities' names. That's not how they do it. Neither do title people. If they don't want to add that person into their entity, then they're going to have to just create a new one. But they should do that right away, because I know it takes some time, a couple of days, to get back your state articles, and it's going to take you some time to get your operating agreement, you know, together.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and one thing I'm learning, guys, with entity documents, too, most of our borrowers have LLCs, and the entity documents are pretty simple. I know we went over LLC documents yesterday. And with corporations, I mean, the EIN document is still the same. Your certificate of good standing document is still the same. The state articles would just say, you know, they would be a corporation, not an LLC, so that's pretty much still the same-looking document. But it's not an operating agreement on a corporation. It's actually bylaws, they're called, and it's pretty it's very similar-looking to an operating agreement, but it will actually say bylaws on the top and that company's name. But it's a different process to add someone to a corporation than it is an LLC. And I don't exactly know what that process is, but they would have to, they would want to contact, again, go to their state website, go to the business section if they're not sure how to add someone to their corporation. Most people are pretty sophisticated and know how to do these things on their own. If they don't, I'll always try to, you know, search for links and provide them some resources. But I mean, the best thing to do is if you're unsure how to, you know, maybe add someone to your entity or something, because you want to obviously be doing it the legal way. I could just say, hey, you really want to contact maybe a real estate attorney. But sometimes if you do call the state, they can, you know, give you some advice on at least tell you what form you need to file with them to get that done successfully. So did anyone else have any other questions at all? All right, guys, I know we went over today. I'm sorry for that. But we're done for now. We're not going to do anything more with processing. But, again, as everyone does get files and stuff, just when you get stuck, just let me know, and I'll be there to help. Thank you guys for being on the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.